නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ යායිමා භන්තේ අනේක විහිතා දිට්ඨියෝ ලෝකේ උප්පජ්ජಂತಿ අත්තවාද පටිසංයුත්තාවා ලෝකවාද පටිසංයුත්තාවා ආදිමේවනුකෝ භන්තේ භික්ඛුනෝ මනසිකරෝතෝ ඒවන්තේ සං දිට්ඨීනම් පහානං හෝති ඒවම් මේතා සං දිට්ඨීනම් පටිනිසග්ගෝ හෝති ඉති. Dear friends in Dhamma, so we are discussing various suttas in this sutta teaching session, and particularly we are trying to get some guidance towards our practice. And one of the interesting suttas available in Majjhima Nikaya, particularly helping us to give a kind of a guidance, particularly in our vipassana practice, is this what we call the Salleka Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 8. So Bhikkhu Bodhi translated it as effacement. And basically, if I just give you a kind of a brief summary, because it's a little long sutta, so therefore before going to the content of it, if I give you a kind of a summary, Venerable Mahachunda, who is an Arahant, is accompanying with several other monks, and according to the commentary, they are students of Venerable Mahachunda. It seems to have they are carrying a kind of an overestimated view. Seems like they think that they have attained without really attained. Such kind of an overestimation was there in those monks, and Venerable Mahachunda want to get a advice from the Buddha. So in front of these students, so he's asking a question. Yaima bhante aneka vihita dittiyo loke uppajjanti attavada patisanyuttava lokavada patisanyuttava. Bhante, there are generally two kinds of doctrines. Different views are existing in the world, and one is related to the oneself, doctrine of a self, and the other one is the doctrines about the world. So these are the two categories of typical views that are arising in the world, and therefore, is it possible for someone to immediately or very early at his stage, practicing stage, are they able to abandon all these views at its early stage? Now, in other hand, you know that we are talking of three fetters: Sakkaya Ditthi, Vichikicca, Sīlabbata Parāmāsa. And Sakkaya Ditthi is what particularly meant here by this doctrines about the self or the various views about the self. So Sakkaya Ditthi, a kind of a personality view, a person centered views, so they are there. So we know that already we have heard that when one attains Sotapanna, the stream entry, one is able to abandon all these Sakkaya Ditthi, the personality views. Now the question from Venerable Mahachunda indicates that he is asking, are these views, not only that, even the world related views, are these views are able to abandon even before the Sotapanna stage? Even before a fair amount of attainment, are we able to abandon these views even at one's early beginning of one's practice? So this is a very interesting question, because sometimes we Buddhists believe that we don't have many views because we have Sammāditti, the right view. So what Buddha talks about, Miccāditti, is not with us, so we don't need to worry about that, and therefore we are free of that. Even before we start practicing, we start meditating, we might have such kind of a view. So are we again free from the personality view, Sakkāya-ditti, even before we start looking at ourselves, without deeply looking at ourselves? So this kind of an overestimation is not an impossible thing. Even today, one can have such a overestimation. So, General Mahachunda is asking this fact. So, is it possible for someone to abandon all these different views, even his early stages of practice? Now, Buddha gave a comprehensive answer, but before going to that, so basically the sutta explain in different levels. So Buddha give a fairly comprehensive answer in a way at the beginning, a kind of a short answer. And then he went on to elaborate five kinds of stages, we can say. Five different stages of the eradication of defilements. And before that he, in a way, remove certain false views, misconceptions, which related to the jhana, related to the samadhi, telling that they are just by being there does not help to abandon the kilesas, abandon the defilements. That's a kind of a first stage that he is talking about. So the jhana alone or the samadhi alone is incapable of abandoning defilements. And next he is getting to a very systematic approach, talking about various defilements and then how to have a kind of a inclination in one's mind, making a kind of an effort or making a determination that I want to address these defilements, and then one is working around them, and then as a result of that one's practice is leading upward. One is able to recognize certain diminished amount of defilements, certain reduction of defilements. So one is now maintaining fair amount of peaceful state of mind. On the other hand, maybe one has now properly attained Maggapala. And further one is continuing, ultimately end up with fully realizing the Nibbana. So this is a kind of a systematic approach Buddha mentioned in this sutta, and ultimately a brief conclusion. So this is a kind of a skeleton of the sutta, and since it is a bit longer, we probably have to remind this skeleton again and again so that we know what's really going on. Otherwise, when we are inside the sutta in a particular section, we might forget about the overview. But the overview is very necessary to have a kind of an understanding about what really going on, where we are, what Buddha is mentioning here. Now, if we are going back to the answer that Buddha is giving, when Mahachunda is asking this question related to the what we call these different views, so Buddha mentioned like this: Yaima chunda aneka vihita dittyo loke uppajjanti attavada patisangyuttava lokavada patisangyuttava yatta cheta dittyo uppajjanti yatta cha anusenti yatta cha samuda charanti tang netammama neso hamasmi na meso attati evametang yathabhutang sammappanya passato evametasang dittinang pahanang hoti evametasang dittinang patanisaggo hoti. Now in this statement, let me first give the Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation. Chunda, as to those various views that arise in the world associated either with doctrines of a self or with doctrines about the world, if the object in the relation to which those views arise, which they underlie and which they are exercised upon, is seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus: this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself, then the abandoning and relinquishing of those views comes about. Now the answer that Buddha giving basically talks about three stages of the views. Dityo uppajjanti, so that indicates the arising of a view. And then yattacha anusenti, so when someone is associating such a view for a long time, then it becomes very much like inculcated in him, very much rooted in one's mind, And even though now he is not thinking about it, it is very much established there. Anusenti. It is now very well established, or it has now gone to the underneath and it is underlying now. Yattacha samudacharanti. Now all his actions are fairly pervaded by this wave, guided by this wave. And his whole actions, all different behaviors are very well governed by this particular view, samudacharanti. So he becomes kind of overwhelmed by that view. He is fully captured by that view. So we can see different stages are explained here. And the Buddha gives a kind of a solution that when one is aware of it, and particularly with respect to which kind of an aggregate one is having this kind of a view, then and there one has to disclaim it or disown it. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. Now this is a kind of a general, very common disowning process, disclaiming process. So whenever there is a kind of a eye-making, mind-making happens, probably if you have noticed it, you can disclaim it, disown it, telling this is not me, this is not mine, this is not myself. So he also, whenever there are views arise in one's mind, so one has to recognize it, one has to notice it, without identifying with it, one needs to abandon it. How are we going to abandon? This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. Now, typically what happens, whenever a view arises, so it has some kind of a motivating feature. It has some kind of a self-promotion, promoting ability. Now, whenever a certain view, certain idea arises in one's mind, there's a tendency to grasp it. There's a tendency to tell, okay, this is my idea. This is my brilliant idea. It is better than your idea. So this is my favorite idea. Or this is my, say, after long thinking, brainstorming, I got this idea. So likewise, we start having some kind of attachment towards that idea, that view. And now abandoning that would be very difficult. Because what happened is it not particularly the view now. Now you have kind of an identification towards that view. It is my view. So this is a difficult part. The view alone is not a big thing. But once we wrap our identification around the view and we are so attached to it, then it becomes very difficult to abandon. So that is the particularly difficult part in the practice even. So whenever we associate something, whenever we are slowly being with something, knowingly or unknowingly, we start grasping it. We are having some kind of an inclination, kind of an attachment, and we start recognizing, identifying with it. Now even though it is a trivial thing that we have attached, but the attachment is so strong, and through that we are holding a self, promoting a self, showing off a self, and in case someone is asking to abandon the view, it's very difficult, because then you feel like you being attacked. Now we'll get into these areas at different levels further. So after Buddha giving this brief but very profound answer, now he is going to different stages. Now, overestimation, as we know, can happen at different levels. Say someone is practicing morality properly. He or she is very good in his morality and maintaining very good ethics. And probably one might think, okay, I am able to maintain this kind of very good moral standard because I am already attained. So this kind of an overestimation can happen. Or you are able to maintain very good concentration. You can sit for several hours without much trouble. And your mind is also quite blissful during that time. Probably you might overestimate, thinking, okay, I have attained. So samadhi is a very entertaining factor in a way, because it is something very beautiful and really encouraging, and one likes to stay there. So samadhi in that sense is a kind of a having fairly attractive features. And immediately we might not have a very good insights or very profound insights, but samadhi, concentrations, are not a difficult thing if one is practicing continuously. Say for example, you have started practicing anapanasati, you have started practicing say rising and falling, or you have started practicing walking practice. So all that, we start with mindfulness, but slowly we might recognize, okay, not only mindfulness, now there's a concentration available in one's mind. Previously I was able to only maintain my attention towards 10 breaths, but now I can maintain attention 20 breaths. Now I can maintain it for 50 breaths. Now I can maintain for 100 breaths. So if you are able to maintain continuously on attention, your attention on 100 breaths, that indicates not only mindfulness, now your mind has gained certain amount of samadhi. Now your body is not giving much trouble, and you feel quite comfortable, and you might even feel happy, even rapturous, and even sometimes overwhelmed by this rapture. And so samadhi becomes pretty interesting, and again it makes you quite happy, enjoyable, unlike the previous days. Now you like to meditate, and when you are sitting, you expect that blissful state in this session. Yesterday I had it, today also let me have it. So that blissful, beautiful state. And you don't need to worry about the world, you don't need to worry about the economy, you don't need to worry about the climate change, you don't need to worry about your family problems or problems at your office, nothing. So while you are at the particular samadhi, it is so blissful, and you are really enjoying, you don't need to worry about anything. So mind is really fascinated by that. So therefore such a wonderful state is there, experience is there in the samadhi. So therefore samadhi is a really encouraging factor for one to engage with meditation. Even though the meditation is a bit difficult at the beginning, slowly as our mind becomes concentrated, so these blissful states are becoming more and more available and easy to attain. And sometimes what happens is people start enjoying that to the level that they even forget the mindfulness. They are not maintaining mindfulness as before. They are not giving any priority to mindfulness. They forget about mindfulness, because once they sit, within a short time, they can easily attain that particular samadhi. So therefore, these kinds of distortions can happen in our practice. But in a way, one can argue, okay, it is a development. You didn't have such a concentrated mind at the beginning. Isn't it a development, that having a concentrated mind? Yes, it is a type of a development. But the problem is, if you are attached to it, if you are overestimating, and probably if you misled by someone's wrong comment, thinking, and your own maybe comment, thinking that this kind of a state is possible, or while you are there, you are attained. You have attained Sotapanna, Sakadagami, whatever. Because the interesting thing is, while you are there, during that time, you don't have any defilements. And even after emerge from it, for a while, you don't have any defilements. Particularly if you have attained Arupa Jhana, which is so powerful, and the mind become quite released temporarily, And you can't have evenness, drop of lust or hatred. So you feel quite calm, serene, blissful. And even after emerging from the samadhi, you still have certain amount of calmness. It can even last several days. So such a very strong, deep samadhis are there. Now therefore, without much trouble, one is able to overestimate oneself, thinking that I have already attained, I have become a sotapanna, or while there I am able to abandon all the asavas, while there I am cutting off the defilements. So these kinds of misconceptions can happen. So Buddha addressed this issue at first. So in this sutta, in the Salleka Sutta, so Buddha first addressed about these eight attainments, eight concentration based attainments. Thanang ko panetan chunda vijjati yang ide kaccho bhikkhu vivicheva kamehi vivicha kusalehi dammehi savitakkan savicharam vivekajam piti sukam pataman jahanang upasampajja vihareya. Tassa eva massa sallekhena viharamiti nako panete chunda ariyasa vineye salleka uchati uchanti ditadamma sukha vihara ete ariyasa vineye uchanti. Now here Buddha mentioned, okay, it is possible, Chunda, that when someone is quite secluded from all the sensual pleasures, secluded from all other unwholesome states, one can enter into this first jhana, which is accompanied by applied mind, accompanied by sustained thought or sustained attention, and a fair amount of rapture, pleasure are also available, and that is also not a rapture, pleasure happening because of the sensuality, rather it is completely abandonment of the sensuality. Now one is having this kind of an unworldly kind of a happiness, niramisa piti. And as a result of this experience, yes?
We are unable to see the slide.
I'll share the document, Geshan, because sometimes when I am showing it, I am getting some messages telling my internet is not stable.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll start again. Now, so the idea is, now when someone is attained this kind of a vajjhana, because of its rapturous, blissful state, he might feel or he might overestimate, thinking, okay, now I have attained Maggapala. And certain wrong views are also there. Probably you can remember when we were discussing Brahmajala Sutta. So there is one section we discussed on the Dittadhamma Nibbana Vada. So in those Dittadhamma Nibbana Vada, so certain people was thinking, when one attained first jhana or second jhana, whatever jhana, so that is the Nibbana. So such kind of misconceptions are there. Well, on the other hand, even a monk in this Buddha Sasana, even the follower of the Buddha's teaching, probably might misunderstand or overestimate once one attained jhana, so one has attained Nibbana or attained Maggapala. Or one is maintaining this kind of an attainment or this absorption, while there one might think certain effacement is happening. Cutting off of the defilements are happening. Diluting of the defilements are happening. Now that is what Buddha denies here. So if one is thinking, he might think thus, I am abiding in effacement. So this is the statement that he might overestimate, wrongly judge, thinking, I am abiding in effacement. So the term effacement, salleka. The salleka means that the reducing of the defilements, cutting off of the defilements. So he might overestimate like that. But now Buddha denies it, telling, but it is not these attainments that are called effacement in the Noble One's discipline. These are called pleasant abidings here and now in the Noble One's discipline. So that's the point. So Buddha do not want to give too much credit to the Samadhi, telling it is that something you are able to maintain while being there, you are able to cut off the defilement. So while being there, you are able to dilute the defilements. Rather, they are called pleasant abidings here and now. Now he went on to explain the second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana like that. So he's talking about the second jhana. When someone is there, he might overestimate, he might think, I am cutting off defilements, I am diluting defilements and abandoning defilements. But in the Noble One's lineage, we are not training like that. It is a mere pleasant abiding here and now. Similarly, the third jhana, similarly the fourth jhana. Now Buddha went on to explain the Arupa Jhana. It is possible here that by completely surmounting the base of infinite space, completely surmounting of perceptions of form with the disappearance of perceptions of sensory impact, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite. Some bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the base of infinite space. He might think thus, I am abiding in effacement. But it is not these attainments that are called effacement in the Noble One's discipline. These are called peaceful abidings in the Noble One's discipline. Now you know there is a difference between the Rupa Jhana and the Arupa Jhana. The Rupa Jhana, you have some limited experience. Limited in the sense your attention is limited to a particular object. But in the Arupa Jhana, your attention is infinite. The space is infinite. So your attention is also infinite. If one go to the other one, infinite consciousness, Vijnanam Chayatana, then your attention is still infinite. Because consciousness is spreaded all around and you are now paying attention to the infinite consciousness. And even in the nothingness, so when you are kind of promoting there is nothing there, there is no object there, that experience also infinite. And when one is attaining the neither perception nor non-perception, that also kind of an infinite, where the mind is boundless, limitless. So mind's attention is not limited to a particular object, rather it is very, very spreaded, pervaded, completely open. Now Buddha was mentioning that the Rupa Jhana, form Jhana, are like what we call pleasant abidings here and now. Arupa Jhana, he is saying, peaceful abidings. So previously they are called pleasant, maybe blissful, but the Ditta Dhamma Sukha Vihara. So in this very life you are having some very pleasant, happy state. But in the Arupa Jhana, they are called Santhe Eta Vihara, Santa Vihara. That means quite peaceful, calm, relaxed states. That's all. They are not called effacement. Now, basically, what we can understand here, so just by mere staying in a jhana, merely staying in a concentration, even though it is giving you a lot of satisfaction, giving you a lot of happiness, joy, peacefulness, we should not overestimate thinking, okay, I have attained Maggapala. I am maintaining a state so that my defilements are being effaced, abandoned. Rather, I am enjoying some kind of a peaceful state here and now. That's all. On the other hand, there is another sutta I like to pay attention, because otherwise it is not good for the practitioners. So this is called Jhana Sutta, in a way Jhana Nissaya Sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya Navaka Nipata, Jhana Nissaya Sutta. So there Buddha discuss about 9 concentrated states. පටමජ්ජාන දුතියජ්ජාන තතියජ්ජාන චතුත්ථජ්ජාන ආකාසනංචායතන විඤ්ඤාණංචායතන අකිඤ්චඤ්ඤායතන නේවසඤ්ඤාන අසඤ්ඤායතන and ultimately සංඥා වේදිත නිරෝධ all nine states are there. So he starts like this. පටමං පහං භික්ඛවේ ජහණං නිස්සාය ආසවානං khayaṃ vadāmi. So now he is saying, because I say that the destruction of the taints occur in dependence on the first jhana. Dutiyam jhanam dutiyam paham bhikkhave jhanam nissaya asavanam khayam vadami. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the second jhana. So likewise he keep on to the other attainments as well. I appear like contradicting with what we have discussed. So in the Salleka Sutta Buddha say, while you are there, don't overestimate, don't think that you are abandoning the defilements. But here, he says, the destruction of the taints occurs in dependence on the first jhana. It is not you are while in the first jhana, but in dependence on the first jhana. So you can use jhana as a kind of a base, but you need to emerge from it. Now Buddha went on to explain what he has mentioned. පටමං පහං භික්ඛවේ ජහණං නිස්සාය ආසවානං khayaṃ vadāmi iti iti ko paṇetaṃ uttaṃ kiñcetaṃ paṭicca uttaṃ. When it was said, because I say that the destruction of the taints occurs in dependence on the first jhana, for what reason was this said? Now he is going to give the proper explanation. So yāvadeva ඉද භික්ඛවේ භික්ඛු විවිච්ඡේව කාමේහි විවිච්ඡා කුසලේ ධම්මේහි සවිතක්කං සවිචාරං විවේකජං පීති සුඛං පටමජ්ජහලං උපසම්පජ්ජ විහෙරති. Now he is there in the first jhana. Now he is emerging from it and he is reflecting. So yāvadeva tathā hoti rūpagataṃ vedanāgataṃ saññāgataṃ saṅkhāragataṃ viññānagataṃ te dhamme aniccato dukkato rogato gandato sallato agato abadato parato palokato sunyato anattato samanupassati. Now this is pure vipassana. Basically he was in the first jhana, but he emerged from it. Now that very experience, currently what he is having and what he had, so basically he is putting it to proper reflection. So this reflection is also very profound. Buddha didn't merely mention anicca dukkha anatta, but he wanted to elaborate it. So anicca is explained in different ways. So the impermanence is explained as aniccato palokato. Aniccato means that it is changing, it is appearing and disappearing, it is arising and passing away. So that is the nature of the anicca. Palokato means basically disintegrating. Everything is disintegrating, collapsing, disintegrating, destroying. So anicca is explained in two terms in a way. Not only anicca, anicca and palokato. And then non-self, that is parato, sunyato, anattato. Parato means that it doesn't belong to you. It is very much like someone else's. And sunyato, it is empty. It's empty of self, empty of what belongs to a self. Anattato, it is non-self. So three characteristics are there with respect to the anatta. And all the other six terms are attributed to the suffering, that is the dukkha. Dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato. Dukkato, it is suffering. Rogato, it is illness. Gandato, it's a boil. Sallato, it's a dart. Agato, it's a misery. And abadato, it's an affliction. Now, suppose, so when someone has emerged from a jhana, so reflecting that experience, reflecting the some kind of a sanya perceptions currently I am having, some kind of a blissful experience currently I am experiencing, some kind of a happy, pleasurable state I am currently experiencing. So you have to reflect differently now, telling it is anicca, it is dukkha, it is anatta. Anicca, not only anicca, anicca to palokato. This is impermanent, this is disintegrating, this is destroying. Dukkha, not merely dukkha. Say more profoundly, more deeply, telling, okay, this is a dukkha, this is kind of an illness, this kind of a boil, this kind of a dart, this kind of a misery, this kind of an affliction. And anatta, this kind of something else, someone else, I have no control, and this is completely empty, and this is anatta, non-self. Now you can see, just by merely being in the samadhi is not that Buddha mentioned here. You need to come out of it. And once you come out of it, you have to have complete dispassion towards it. You are now promoting that dispassion. You are now promoting that kind of decoupling. Previously, you were absorbed to it. Previously, you were so attached to it maybe. You are bound by that. Your mind is fairly conditioned by the samadhi. But once you emerge from it, you are disclaiming. It is not good. It is not something good. It is not. It is entirely suffering. It is impermanent. It is kind of a boil. It is kind of a dart. Now you can see a kind of radical reflection is there once you emerge from the samadhi. But typically people are not doing it. So that's the problem. So it is not the problem of the samadhi, but we are not adding this latter part. We simply want to enjoy the samadhi, and even after the emerging of the samadhi, we want to maintain that bliss, because that is so enticing, that is so blissful, that is so attractive, and we are very much addicted to it. So Buddha's radical answer here, or kind of an advice here, is that once you emerge from the samadhi, you need to do a very thorough, quite radical kind of a reflection, so that you are no more attached to it. And even with the samadhi experience, you can see it's impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self, and you are doing it a more profound way, more deeper way. So then there is no any attachment to the samadhi, but now you are in a very subtle way recognizing the impermanence, very subtle way you are recognizing the unsatisfactoriness, suffering, and the non-self. So if you are doing like that, then Buddha mentioned, so tehi dhammehi chittang pativapeti, so tehi dhammehi chittang pativapetva amataya dhatuya chittang upasangharati. So once you have taken out from the samadhi, and now you do a radical reflection about the qualities of the samadhi, he turns his mind away from those phenomena and direct it to the deathless element. Now you are turning towards a Nibbana. Etan santang etan panitang yadidan sabba sankhara samato sabbu padipadni saggo tanhakkuya virago nirodho nibbanaanti. So tattatito asavanam khayam papunati. This is the way to abandon the taints. So one thing is, you are basically able to be in the samadhi, but being in the samadhi does not guarantee that you attain the Nibbana, or you are able to abandon the defilements. You need to come out of it and do a quite radical reflection, telling all the states I have experienced, all what I am going through, all different kinds of forms, all different feelings. Those may be very blissful feelings, maybe perceptions, all different little formations, consciousness, all that are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and non-self. And by doing so, you are now turning your attention towards the Nibbana, etan santang, etam panitang, yadidan sabba sankhara samato, like that. It doesn't mean that you are stating that statement, etan santang, etam panitang. It is not that you are doing such kind of a statement, rather you are able to turn your attention away from the samadhi. You see the repercussions, you see the drawbacks of the samadhi, and maintain the mind towards more into the unconditioned. Samadhi state is a conditioned state. Now you are trying to maintain an unconditioned state of the mind. Now this is not an easy task, by the way, because you know that the samadhi is quite enticing. Samadhi is quite interested. easily one get attached to it. And but coming out of it and radically reflecting its drawbacks is a really challenging part. So therefore, what happens for majority of the people is that they are not getting to this part. So they simply absorb to the samadhi and they come out of it. Maybe even that happens without much of their control. And once they have emerged from it, so they want to even maintain it. They are still enjoying it. They are still attached to it. They want to get it again next day. They are imagining how I am going to spend more time tomorrow in that. So likewise, kind of an addiction is there. So in the first part of this sutta, therefore Buddha mentioned that you need to have kind of a detachment towards the samadhi. But that doesn't mean that you should not get into the samadhi. So one has to, if one is having the capacity and one's mind is encouraged by the samadhi, no harm that you can spend some time there. And the advantage is that even though you are there, it does not promote defilements. You know that in the Chula Vedala Sutta, when Visakha is asking from Venerable Dhammadinna, so are all the happiness causes raga anusaya to promote, the tendency towards the lust to be promoted? And Venerable Dhammadinna says no. Examples are the samadhis, examples are the jhanas. So when you are in the jhana, you can't say, even though you are absorbed, even though you are there, so blissful, you are promoting some kind of a lustful experience. So lust is not there. The sensuality related desires are not there. Therefore, the raganusa is not promoted while you are in the samadhi. So that is one advantage. So you can have a kind of break in this quite difficult world, troublesome world. So you take a kind of an escape while being in the samadhi. So that is something beautiful in a way. Once a while, get into a samadhi and stay there so that you feel some kind of a bliss. But attaching to it or overestimating it, thinking that by merely being there you are able to abandon defilements, weaken the defilements, so that is an overestimation that we need to be realistically understand. And we can make use of the samadhi, but should not overestimate it. And if one is capable, one can emerge from the samadhi and have a kind of a dispassionate, a radical reflection towards the current experience happening, which has already came through from the samadhi. So that is a radical kind of reflection, as I have explained from the Jhana Nissaya Sutta. And so therefore, this is the first stage that Buddha explained to the Chunda, Mahachunda, because it can assume that the students of Venerable Mahachunda also might have attained Jhana. Already they are practitioners, they are able to maintain good samadhi. Probably some of them may had the wrong view or estimation, thinking that they have attained. But the attainment, Sotapanna Phala, stream entry, particularly discuss about the abandoning of Sakkaya Ditti, the personality view, abandoning of Vichikicca, the doubt, and abandonment of the kind of rites and rituals, kind of a belief that the rites and rituals can produce a complete freedom by merely practicing those. Silabhuta Paramasa. Now, those three are properly cut off only when one attains stream winner, only one attains stream entry. Before that, if we think, okay, I am already attained, already no more views, no more personality views, so that is an overestimation. So that could be the scenario why Buddha particularly mentioning this samadhi related part at first in this sutta, because quite easily one can attain jhana or samadhi when compared to the insights. That the, it may take some time for one to establish properly in the vipassana practice, properly attune, properly fine-tune one's attention and see things truly are, so it might take some time. But on the other hand, attaining jhana comparatively might be easy. So one may be easily attain a samadhi at first. Later, as one is maturing, one may be developing vipassana. But unfortunately, if one is overestimating oneself, even at the early stages, thinking, I have already attained, while being in the jhana, I am cutting off the defilements, so that is wrong. Okay, we'll get into the other parts of this sutta next time. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. You have a question? Yeah, okay. From my side, there's a question from Kelvin. So I invite him to. Yeah, go ahead.
That was nice for me once. Whenever the suttas talk about turning the mind towards freedom, turning the mind towards the element of Nibbana, maybe can you explain what does that mean in a practical sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, practical sense means now, say for example, you are in the first jhana, and while being in the first jhana, the properties, assume that you went there through Anapanasati. And when one is practicing Anapanasati, say if you are to deeply attain Samadhi, so you are making use of the Nimitta. Okay, the Patibhaga Nimitta, the counterpart sign, it's there. Now you slowly abandon the what you call the breath. Instead, you are keeping this Nimitta, the sign, as your primary object. And slowly, slowly, you are looking at it. You are so fascinated by it, so attached to it. So it's we are talking about Samatha now. And you think it is so beautiful, so blissful, and you are so appreciative about it. And when you are maintaining such a very beautiful mind, you get absorbed to it. So basically, the nimitta become you. So it's a kind of a identification. Complete identification happens. So that's why we call it as a what we call the absorption. You become that. And assume after a while you emerge from it. So even once you emerge, still a little bit of bliss is available. Okay, now you need to see how it is coming and going, or how it is varying, how it is fluctuating, and you can't maintain as you wish. No, it's a kind of a bliss which is conditioned. So this, whatever the blissful experience, whatever the rapturous experience, say first jhana or second jhana is producing, so it's a kind of a conditioned phenomena. Maybe assume that we are talking about rapture. Say you feel that body is going through a kind of a jerk, kind of goosebumps, or it becomes like elated. So all these are happening time to time, but you have no much control. You can't willingly take it, isn't it? So you can't willingly make it happen, but they are happening. So you, in that sense, you can look at, okay, it is beyond my control. It is palokato. Say, on the other hand, it is coming and going. It is impermanent. It is not lasting forever, but it has a nature to arise. It has a nature to pass away. It is impermanent. And say if there are any minor different kinds of little mental attributes are there, say little bit of volition is there, little bit of sanya, different perceptions are there. Maybe you can still see the nimitta, they are fluctuating. So very much like you are looking at the defects now. Defects of the experience. Whatever the feelings, they are defective. Whatever the perceptions, they are defective. Whatever the formations, they are defective. Whatever the consciousness, they are defective. Likewise, so rather than appreciating the current experience, now you see the defects. You see how impermanent it is and how non-governable it is. And you can see in the Buddha's statement, he's putting even more radical kind of a reflections. Okay, it is a dart, it's a boil, isn't it? It is so suffering. So how can we say that this blissful experience is suffering, isn't it? So you need a fairly radical reflection to look at from like that, from like such angle. You know, in the Vedana Anupassana, so at first only the Dukkha Vedana, the painful feelings, we feel like painful Dukkha. But as you continue, probably you may slowly understand all the different types of Vedana. They are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. They are not lasting for several minutes. Rather, they are quite instantaneous, like quite inconstant. Either they are happy feelings, either they are painful feeling or equanimous feelings, doesn't matter. They are almost like distills. Like Buddha mentioned, they are bubbulupama. You know, they are like air bubbles. Quickly come and go, quickly bursting. You see the bursting nature of all that. So then this bursting nature is common even to the happy feeling. Isn't it? This bursting nature, this impermanent nature, this transient nature is common even to the unhappy or happy feelings. Now, when you are looking like that, now you might not get attracted to the happy feelings, because happy feelings are also very quickly bursting, quickly coming and going. So similarly, in the jhanic experience also, once you are come out of it, if you are able to look at from that angle, it's a kind of a challenge, isn't it? So you need to have very sharp mindfulness, very good concentration, and not only that, a very good dispassion for you to further. Now, by looking at it, you are furthering your dispassion. So, because previously you were attached to it, but now you are developing certain separation, dispassion, by reflecting, by promoting some sort of a reality into the picture. So, I mean, for some people it may be easy, but for many others it would be difficult, isn't it? Yeah, so that is how you need to do it. Little challenging, by the way. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So, any other question from your side?
Sorry, Nas, I cannot see any hands that been raised. But I have a question, or I have a first comment. This is a very unique teaching. I have not heard, maybe I have heard before, but never sort of sunk into my head the two tiers of looking in a way. Once you sort of come to samadhi, you come out from that as well, and then to sort of practice through this analysis of vipassana, right? And it's really good for me to sort of see something differently, which I think I have to sort of think about this in a very tiered level and try to apply as well.
Correct.
So thank you for the teaching.
Right.
So I think there is one hand has been raised, so I will ask Gita to Mendes to unmute and then ask the question.
Bhante, I wonder if you could explain to me about Yoniso Manasikara,
mm-hmm.
how it works in practice. If I'm, say, just watching the breath, there is Manasikara, but how does it become a Yoniso Manasikara? What is that?
Hmm. Actually, Yoniso Manasikara particularly talks about the wisdom aspect. Now, rather than simply being in the surface, you are going to the source, you are going to the roots. You are kind of penetratively looking at it. Now, typically what happens is, when we are developing only the samadhi, we are not promoting much about the yoniso manasikara. Rather, we promote a very blissful, very pleasant, quite beautiful kind of an experience, and we appreciate that. And we simply keep the mind on the surface. Okay, this is in-breath, this is out-breath, that's all. And as a result of that, your mind gets concentrated, and even the nimittas can happen. And when the nimitta happen, there also you are not supposed to look at the defects. Rather, you need to accept it as the most beautiful thing available. So this is a kind of a conditioning in the mind towards a samadhi. But when you are looking at the yoniso manasikara, that means you are looking at it in a more penetrative way. How the breath happens. Where is it touching? And compared to in-breath, whether the out-breath is long or short, compared to out-breath, whether the in-breath is long or short. So what are the differences? And from which nostril in-breath is going in, from which nostril the out-breath is coming out, or whether the in-breath is cooler or out-breath is cooler. So these kinds of very refined characteristics, you are not thinking actually, you are now trying to, you know, kind of carefully analyze, or you can't say even analysis, you can say you are investigating. These attributes are there, these characteristics are there in this experience, but they are not evident unless you are looking at it very carefully. You are going to the root, you are going to the source, you are penetratively looking at the experience. So this is where we are promoting Yonso Manasikara. Now any other meditation technique, say you are practicing walking meditation, you are practicing rising and falling, situation is very same. You have to penetratively looking at the experience so that the subtle details become evident to you, available to you.
And Bhante, the things like impermanence, those characteristics, then will become apparent as you penetrate like this.
Exactly.
So, is that right?
Correct. So more you are looking at it and more you are experiencing the way it is, so the phenomena themselves will show us the impermanence. So it is not that I am trying to now say impose impermanence. Rather, let the phenomena show me their impermanence. So say, for example, when you are penetratively looking at the breath, so the breath can become more detailed. So it may be several breaths, it's not a single breath now. Little breaths are there. So this each little breath coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. So it is showing its impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, and you have no control how many little breaths are there, how long it's going to last. None of these attributes you can't control. So basically, we can see the non-self feature by looking at this behavior.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
I think there is another hand that's been raised. Isala, you can unmute and ask the question.
Thank you, Keshan. Thank you, Bhante, for the Dhamma talk today. It's very useful. I would like to, regarding the meditation, I would like to ask some clarification, Bhante. Let's say in my meditation, I would say I do the vipassana practice. I wouldn't see that much of a nimitta as such now. So, and also not long samadhi periods. So I would like to think that, as you have taught us before, Bhante, like vipassana samadhi, which are quick ones and short ones. That's kind of what I experience now. And at the end of it, Bhante, I still feel very much relief and I feel very happy and I feel very kind of satisfied. Now, Bhante, when I look at that, but at the same time, Bhante, in the morning, I kind of automatically, not looking forward, it is automatically happen, I do the meditation. So, Bhante, in this case, where is the anicca dukkha anatta coming? Is it like, I think probably you touched a little bit in the previous answer. Is that how I should look at it in this case? Because I'm not kind of really attached to it, but at the same time, I can say I like to do it. So there may be some attachment. But how do I look at anicca dukkha anatta in this case, Bhante?
Now, if you are observing different phenomena, say for example, you are paying attention to the body and there are various bodily sensations are happening and they are quickly arising and passing away. So that they are showing their impermanent nature. By looking at them, you can see that sensations are not permanent. Sensations quickly arise. And as you look at them, quickly they pass away. So what are we looking at then? So we are looking at their behavior. This behavior is quite vulnerable. This behavior is out of control. And you can't expect some kind of satisfaction from this very impermanent, transient process. So all that is actually giving you the emphasis about impermanent suffering and non-self. Even though we are not putting the words there, but the mind understands how undependable they are, how non-governable they are. And there is no self within. And their behavior is quite transient. So by looking at it, that's why we call it as a pachakkhanyana, kind of a depend on the experience. So the knowledge, the vipassana type of knowledge that you have is based on the experience. It is not a mere book reading. It's not a mere hypothetical imagination. Rather, it is an experience. So you don't need to say it is impermanent, unsatisfactory in oneself, but what you are experiencing is that. And the interesting thing is, if you have properly experienced it, if you have thoroughly understood it, you can see the result. The result is the dispassion. Now you don't need to attach to it. You don't need to say it is mine. You don't need to claim it. Rather, you are maintaining some kind of a separation, kind of a distance. So the things are happening, but mind is not claiming it as me, myself, etc. So that naturally, kind of a disowning has happened. Disclaiming has happened. And now, as you practice, slowly, slowly, your mind becomes so dispassionate, ultimately it will completely avoid any kind of a grasping. No more grasping. So there may be instances your mind is completely free from everything. Mind has become completely independent, free from everything. No form aggregate, no perceptions, no feelings, or no any thoughts, intentions, but it is very much like secluded. It has become a kind of a solid, maintaining kind of a solitude, completely dispassionate, not interested anymore about the five aggregates. So this is where we say, okay, a kind of a vipassana samadhi, which is not taking any signs now. Signs of the aggregates are no more.
Thank you, Bhante. Yes, I understand. Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, yeah.
Bhante, that's all the hands that
yeah.
have been raised. I cannot see any, but I think one other question, the disowning process itself, what you just talked about, is it when you sort of do this type of disowning process, which is it's not me, and that how would the question has come for me earlier as well? Is it just you have to say it to yourself, or is it just you sort of see this through realizing that there is no attachment as such? So you cannot associate to it. Is it verbalizing or is it just sort of realizing? That's my question for you.
Yeah, I think both are valid. So actually Buddha here in a way verbalize it. Netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. So little bit of arousing the wisdom. So you know that, you understood it, but unfortunately because of the past tendency, mind is very much like to attach to it. It's going to attach to it. So now you are giving a warning. Okay, don't do it. It's netam mama neso hamasmi na meso attati. It's not me, it is not mine, it is not myself. A kind of a warning to the mind, a direction given to the mind, an advice given to the mind. So no harm. So it's a kind of diverting your attention to the vipassana now. It's necessary. Because there may be a tendency in the mind to get attracted or to identify, telling it is me, it is myself, it belongs to me. But you are putting the opposite here. You are not promoting that view, rather you are adding the wisdom here purposely. Now, it appears like kind of a purposeful intervention, but it may be necessary. Later, you don't need even. Later, you might not need to tell the whole thing. You can simply look at it and then slowly mind will come back, something like that. Now, say for example, in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 152. So there, Buddha gives some kind of a similar approach. Say for example, for the yogi who not yet attained, Buddha say you need to look at, okay, whatever the current experience which you have already came out is somewhat conditioned. But you are in a fairly unconditioned state, so bliss, so calm, equanimous, peaceful state. But now, as a result of your interference with the objects, interference with the sight, sound, smell, taste, etc., now your mind becomes somewhat agitated. Now your mind becomes somewhat gross. So look at that nature and appreciate that previous state, more calm, relaxed, peaceful state, and return back to that. A kind of a purposeful intervention is there. But later, then Buddha mentioned to the seka, to the trainee, okay, you don't need to do that much. You can simply have a little bit of shame. That's enough. Say, again, mind might have gone to that agitated state, but be shameful about it. That's enough. It will then return back to the peaceful state. So that means as one is progressing, that purposeful intervention becomes less and less. Only a little direction is enough so that you again come back to the proper track.
Very good, Bhante. Thank you so much. I understand. So I think those are the only questions from our side.
Okay. Then we'll wind up the session. And today also we have spent a fair amount of time discussing Buddha's teaching and listening to the Dhamma. And today, Venerable Dhammosada is absent, so I'll do the sharing of merits. So all the merits what we have accrued today, we'll share with all the celestial beings and all the past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana, and we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.